Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Oh, hey there, internet. We are back for another episode of the Real Talk with Dana podcast. This is episode 85, and today we are talking with Sarah Keel, who is a nutrition coach and digestive specialist for vegans with celiac disease, and who also works with women struggling with their relationship with food and their bodies, which is a little bit of a mouthful. And I think Sarah is the first vegan I've had on the podcast, so that's pretty fun. And she is on a mission to help women recovering from autoimmune disease that directly impacts their connection to food despite many restrictions. So Sarah, like me, has celiac, so that's fun because now we're celiac buddies. This is kind of the thing that happens that Sarah and I were talking about. It's like, as soon as you find out that someone else has an autoimmune disease, it's like, oh, when did you get diagnosed? Like, what's your story? And you're instantly friends, at least on that level. So Sarah helps women to expand and enjoy their diets while supporting their digestion, to trust and feel connected to their body and food, and to finally feel free to focus on what really matters because you don't have to choose between your health and your heart, which is just amazing, and I love that. And her goal is to show women how to regain respect, love, and trust of their bodies and the food they eat after years of damage. But before we get to the episode, at this point, I will have just gotten back fresh off the plane from Bali, which is pretty cool. I'm probably severely jet lagged at this point. I hope you guys have been following along on my Instagram. If you haven't, then I have been logging and saving everything on my stories, probably put a bunch of pictures up at this point, and I'm gonna save it in my highlights so that you and I can both relive vicariously through all of the amazing times that I have been having out there. But anyway, so I wanted to tell you guys that this month on the podcast, I'm gonna be focusing a lot on digestive health, on probiotics, on food sensitivities, on leaky gut, on all of the things trying to make our tummies feel a little bit better. Because on this podcast, we are all about feeling better from the inside out. And a lot of the time, we're dealing with digestive issues, whether that's a result of an autoimmune disease, whether that's a result of not tolerating a certain food that you're eating, whether that's a result of a history of disordered eating or eating disorders, controlling your food, a bacterial overgrowth, parasite, all of the things. We are going to be talking about all of it. So if you guys have any specific questions about digestive health, and we did go into that a little bit on this episode, specifically talking about digestive health for vegans and vegetarians, which isn't something that I've talked about before. I know that for a fact. But if you have any questions about digestive health, send them in either to my email. It's realfoodwithdana@gmail.com. You can also submit a question to the podcast. You can message me on Instagram, all of the things. But that's going to be the focus for this month. Let's get started. So Sarah, you are a digestive specialist for vegans with celiac disease, and you also work with women struggling with their relationship with food in their bodies. So that's like, well, first of all, a mouthful. And so tell me how you got to where you are today in specializing in this from your own personal health journey.
Yeah, no, like a lot of, I think, coaches and even just medical professionals, definitely got to wanting to help basically like a prior version of myself back when I was struggling more. So a lot of those things do apply to me and my own past. I was a vegetarian back in like junior high, definitely not a healthy vegetarian. It's what you'd expect when you let a 12 or 13 year old start dictating their diet. And then started having a lot of like really random, like seemingly unconnected issues in high school. And then right before I turned 18, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. And so going gluten-free solved a lot of them, like the knee pain that the chiropractor couldn't help with and the depression that the therapist didn't help with and stuff like that. And I was already, had been for years a vegetarian, so I wanted to stick with that. And so that, you know, and that's also 10 years ago. So it was definitely a different diet scene back then and food options and all that. And I just kind of made it work through college. I ate the same few foods. I felt a lot better, but still not great. So that's definitely when I started developing unhealthier relationship with food, where I would still kind of get bloated with the big thing. Sometimes like random pain where I'm like, I don't understand what my body's doing. I just know that it doesn't like food or food doesn't like me or whatever is happening. And it was not uncommon, I think, towards the end of my college experience to not eat until like 7 or 8 p.m. I'm like, I know that as soon as I eat, doesn't matter what it is, even if it's a glass of water, I'm not going to feel great. I don't want that to happen. I'm trying to go to class. I'm trying to do things and have a life. And so I'm just going to avoid it. And that was my solution for years, just to push it off and avoid it. And my body, you know, adapted, and I wouldn't get hungry earlier in the day, which is not great in and of itself. But that was my coping mechanism, was I just learned to adapt and to deal with it. And I just assumed that was normal. I didn't question it. It just like is what it is. I ate the same few foods because I trusted them more, that they didn't make me sick all the time. And I didn't eat that much of them. And then after graduating, so I graduated, God, how many years? It's been a number of years. I'm like, I feel so old. And so I studied chemistry. So it's not directly related, but I definitely have like an interesting background there. My brain likes sciencey things. Just funny that I never really before that had thought to apply that to like my own body or health. And went through some of my own shit right out of college. Kind of took a breather from life. And when I started getting back into it, I started getting a little bit interested in kind of alternative medicine, nutrition, healing the body. There was a little bit more out there at that point in time. It had been, you know, 5 or 6 years since maybe I graduated high school and had been diagnosed, and was still totally gluten-free, totally vegetarian. And I'm looking and I can't find basically the information that I was looking for. I'm like, oh, I must have a leaky gut because I have celiac disease. No one ever told me that you need to go back and do anything other than eat gluten-free. That's all the advice that I got from my like specialist. I'm like, well, maybe this is it. Maybe this is why I still don't feel as well as I probably should, like a normal human being, you know? And so I was looking and all of the like regular, you know, diets or protocols, whatever you want to call them. So things like paleo, which was already a thing back then, make you cut out major food groups that you pretty much need if you're not eating meat. And they make it sound like you absolutely have to have like bone broth and collagen and a bunch of meat and stuff that I just wasn't willing to do. So I'm like, well, there has to be another way. Like the body doesn't only survive under this like one set of conditions. But I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know that there was like anybody else out there even like going through these same struggles. And so I wound up going back to school for nutrition coaching certification. So that took me like a year. I got really into it. And it's like, all right, cool. I was learning a lot. I was doing my own research too. Started really actually going in and learning about my own disease and what was actually happening in my body, which is huge. It's way easier to kind of understand when something happens or goes wrong when you know what's happening. It's not just like playing victim mode 100%. And then So I did that. I didn't feel comfortable coaching yet, so I actually took a job at an integrative medical office. I worked there for like 4 years in their supplement department, and I learned a lot from all of the, because they're like acupuncturists and herbalists, like energy medicine, chiropractors, doctors, nutritionists, all sorts of stuff. And it was, I think, all the time I spent there and then continuing education that I was like, you know what? I feel like I had a handle on this. I put some missing pieces together. I cleaned up my own diet. I started doing more work on healing my own relationship because I definitely hit a wall where I'm like, you know what? Like I figured out supplements. Like I know, you know, what a good diet for me looks like, and I'm still not where I want to be. and realized it had become a chicken or the egg situation. Like, I've spent so many years eating and feeling sick directly after eating that I've associated that with food. You know, makes sense. That your mind is so powerful. I'm like, all right, so to what degree is what's happening an actual physiological in my body response to the food, and how much of it is a response that I'm creating in my body because I'm in my mind expecting this to happen? I'm like, I know how to fix what I'm eating. I don't know how to fix this like mental loop that I'm stuck in that I've built over so many years. And so that was like, I honestly think that was the hardest one, because that's definitely wasn't at that point in time in my realm of like expertise at all. So I wound up partnering with the right person. And eventually like a flip did switch, and I'm like, oh, like I actually can trust my body. It does know what it's doing. And that really was a huge turning point for me. And so after, you know, a few years of doing this and I feel better on my own, I got to the point where I actually started doing coaching. And so that's kind of where we're at now, is I just do the private coaching. And it definitely does have that mindset component, because it's huge, you know, especially when you're looking at, it's not only an autoimmune disease, which all of them, like, it's a mind fuck. It just is. But it's also like a disease about, like, centered around food. So of course it's going to set you up to have a really unhealthy, disordered relationship with food. And that's definitely a factor in healing too.
Yeah, definitely. So how exactly was it working with that practitioner that helped you figure out what was going on? And was it just the celiac, or was it like something on top of that too?
So we actually were in the process way back when of like just ruling stuff out so that they could diagnose me with IBS. That's what their goal was. And the first thing that came back was I was insanely anemic because I was vegetarian. I was, you know, not being conscious of what I was eating. I was a kid. And then I wasn't absorbing anything. And I probably had celiac disease for, I'm going to guess, a few years before I was diagnosed. So not too long, but definitely long enough. So that came back, got flagged. They wanted to send me, you know, to the hospital for an infusion. I was able to get into a gastroenterologist who's like, you're not actively losing blood. You just don't have enough iron. And so I like managed to avoid that. And then it took a little bit longer for the test results to come in, but the antibodies came back that I did have celiac disease. We did the endoscopy for the confirmation. And then they tried a few things. Like we tried cutting out dairy, tried cutting out fructose. I don't even know if I did it right that many years ago. I really don't. But at that point, I did what I thought was cutting out fructose because they wanted to like test to see if it was that. Tested for like delayed gastric emptying, so gastroparesis. That was an interesting test that came back normal. I feel like we tested for SIBO. I might have had it and been treated and still wasn't it. Basically, they had a few ideas after I had gone gluten-free and my biopsy was okay and I still didn't feel great, but none of them panned out and really fix the problem. And so I was like, all right, I'm just stuck then. Because this was somebody who specialized in celiac disease. And they're like, yeah, I don't really know what else to do for you. So I just kind of went back to my life. We tried, what did we do? We definitely went to see like a nutritionist and got like random food. We did food allergy testing. Nothing came back as like really allergic. Did food, what, intolerance? No, it must have been sensitivity testing, and didn't do much with that because a bunch of stuff came back. And I basically, I went on through college just accepting that that's just what it was. And it wasn't until I kind of got interested in all of this and I'm like, hey, you know what? I need to circle back around because I think there's something there.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to talk about the digestive piece with like the way that you work with your clients specifically, because this is something that I run into a lot with, I don't think right now I don't have any vegan clients, but I have a couple vegetarian clients and a lot of them have not celiac, but a lot of digestive issues. And it can be super hard. I mean, you know this, but I'm just reiterating it for the listeners. Like, when you're vegan or vegetarian, it's almost even harder when you have digestive issues, because a lot of the recommendations, like you said, with the whole paleo thing, is like, all right, let's eat slow cooked meats and bone broths and collagen and like fish, because those are all like super nutrient dense and easy to digest. But so what do you do, given that those are some of the most healing foods for gut issues? Like, what healing foods have you seen the most success with for your clients?
I think that, I mean, you can definitely take a lot of the same principles, and that's what I wound up circling around to. I still like read the books and found it really fascinating. I know so many people find benefit from things like this specific carbohydrate diet or paleo or Walls protocol or anything like that. So you can definitely take a lot of that information and figure out how to use it. So, like, you know, the fact that you find more anti-nutrients in, you know, grains and legumes and stuff like that, you can still find stuff that's sprouted, and you can, you know, maybe just be mindful of portions, and some things might be more triggering than others for people. And there's a point where you could go to a practitioner for testing. If you're having specific symptoms, you could look at something like SIBO, that it's definitely going to feel worse when you're eating a bunch of grains, for instance. But yeah, you can still like slow cook your foods. You can still make like a really great broth. Definitely, it's easy to fall into the trap of like, oh, I'm going to make salads and smoothies and stuff like that, which you're like, oh, yay, I read all about raw and enzymes and stuff like that. But it's definitely going to be more digestible when it's well cooked, or when you make like a soup or something like that. So that's an easy way to start is, you know, don't maybe go vlog on all of the raw foods. It's maybe not your best bet right off the bat. And then you definitely can, there's a time and a place, I think, for supplementation. And so some things you can easily find in plant foods and some not so much. Like, I definitely, if my gut is aggravated, feel well doing a supplement that has, you know, a little bit of glutamine in it, some really like soothing herbs. I don't like tea, but for people who do, you can definitely find some really great herbal teas that are going to be nice. There's a lot that you can do. And I think it's the same principles. You just have to be like, all right, so taking out what food serves that function, what, you know, plant-based food can serve that same function. And you can find a lot of the same nutrients and, you know, how maybe digestible it is. Like beans, you know, you pressure cook it, you add kombu, stuff like that, it's going to be better than just like buying canned beans.
Yeah, and I was actually going to ask you about stuff like that, because like on the flip side of things, it's like, okay, well, these foods we know can be good for healing for people, but they don't work in your choice of diet if you're vegan or vegetarian. But then like on the flip side of things, okay, now we're focusing on the abundance mentality rather than the restriction, right?
Right.
Like, okay.
Right.
So what are the foods that vegans and vegetarians, like, we focus on aside from, you know, raw foods, which like can be a part of anyone's diet, but then also like the legumes, the grains, like the dairy for vegetarians, like the soy, the nuts, like those can also all cause varying degrees of digestive issues. So what are the kind of like tips and tricks that you can do with those foods to make them more digestible and cause like less of an issue for your clients, knowing that many vegans and vegetarians like lean very heavily on these foods?
Yeah, I actually do have a guide at my website too. So I'll give you the link to give everybody for that. That covers kind of exactly that. Cause that's what you look at. You like, hey, I want to stick to this diet without meat, but everything that I'm reading tells me that I can't or shouldn't, at least, eat the food that I need to. And so you're looking at, well, why is that? And a lot of times it is because either they're so starchy or there's anti-nutrients or, you know, whatever the case may be. So for honestly, most of them, you can look at the old school methods. So that's like soaking, sprouting. And I know that most people don't want to do that. You can find ones in the store that already have. I like to cheat. I definitely go to the store or go on, you know, Thrive or whatever, and we'll buy like the sprouted quinoa So I'm like, yes, it's worth the extra few dollars for me to not do it myself, but to know it's already been done.
And for you to not feel like crap, which is what a lot of those people are dealing
Yeah,
with, so.
definitely. Definitely worth it. Beans, most of. So adding kombu definitely helps it to be more digestible. You can find certain brands, like I get, I think it's Eden's Organic, where it actually, like on the ingredient label, will say that kombu is in there, that they cook it with that. And if you look at studies on reducing the anti-nutrient content in legumes, specifically in beans, the biggest, like easiest, most foolproof way for those is just going to be actually how you cook them. So you don't have to be doing the soaking and spread. It's actually pressure cooking, which I know not everybody's going to have that, but you can definitely find even canned bean brands that do that. So Eden's, I think, cooks theirs like that. That's the brand that I always buy. So I know that if I'm going to eat it, like I want it to be as like gentle on my system as possible, and cause the least number of problems. If you're trying something new, I'm sure you could add in some like digestive enzymes just to give you a little bit extra security, or feel like trying the dairy and you hadn't done that in a while. And even the types of dairy. I know you had the episode on like reintroduction paralysis. I definitely have had that problem. I'm like, yes, that is a thing. Did a plant-based, because I was vegetarian for, up until the last few years. So I'm like, it's a lot to give up. Like, I know I want to, I want to try it. I want to see how my body feels on it. But so I did it. I signed up for a program that it wasn't meant to be an elimination diet, but from like my own experience, I've helped people through them, even back at the office that I worked in. And it took out a lot of the same things, but it gave you all the recipes. It was super easy. You had shopping lists, you had all that. So I did that. And I will say that I didn't feel as well doing all the smoothies. So when I cut back and I started doing normal breakfasts where it was cooked food, I did feel better. So it just goes to show, it's certainly not, anything is not one size fits all. And it definitely is a little bit, even though it's all broken down, it's blended. I'm not chewing all of my food. It's still maybe not the best choice for everybody. And had gone through, taken all that stuff out and wanted to reintroduce everything just to see, because it's a nice way just to know what your body can handle and what it likes and doesn't like. And that changes over time too. So you're never, anytime someone was like so concerned and we're going over all the things that come out in an elimination diet, you're like, you know what? Like, you're going to put these back in. And if they don't go well, give it more time. And then you can try putting them back in again. This is by no means the diet for the rest of your life. It doesn't have to be your diet for the rest of the month or the year, which also really helps put things in perspective that it changes. Your body changes, what it can tolerate changes, how it digests changes, what food we have available changes. But I was so worried about how I was going to react to something, and I didn't know, like, there's like 10 different types of dairy, because you've got like fermented and different amounts of casein and whey and lactose and all those. I'm like, I don't even know. So I didn't introduce them for like a whole year, and I signed up and I did the program again. I'm like, I actually need to do it this time. And so I did. It's a lot easier when you like eat nightshades and stuff like that, because that I was worried about that, like aggravating my knees, and like they were okay. I'm like, yes, I can have tomatoes now. But yeah, it's so individual, and you play around with it. And even some things, if you can't have it in a large quantity, doesn't mean you can't have it at all. It doesn't have to, it's not, it might be better, for you to not, but it also might be fine to include some things, just like, you're looking at glycemic index, like load counts, like how much volume matters. I don't even know what the question was at this point.
You're just talking, which is what we do on podcasts. No, you said you were
I
going to send the guide of like how to make things more easily
Yes.
digestible. But I love how you said like it doesn't have to be, well, first, like it's never going to be this way forever. The only things that are completely black and white is like, all right, you have celiac disease, right?
Correct.
Or like
For someone that
you
will never change.
have
Yeah.
the proverbial you, we, whatever it is, like you have a peanut allergy. Like, yep, definitely want to avoid that unless you want to have
an, that again.
Yeah, exactly. Never going to eat this again and need to carry an EpiPen just in case. But like other things, like you were saying, even if you have a mild or a moderate or whatever it is reaction to them right now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be that way forever. It also doesn't mean that that's a bad food, right? It just means that it's not working super well for your body's like unique situation right now. So let's figure out, instead of just being like, oh, that food is bad for me, it's like, okay, let's take a step back. Sure, it's not, my body's not reacting well to this. Let's figure out why my body's not reacting well to this, because most of the time it's not even about the food. It's that something else is going on in your body that's causing you to have that reaction to that food. It's not like, oh, you ate tomatoes and then like all of a sudden your body just decided to be like, yeah, I'm going to break out in this rash that won't go away for 6 days. You know, it's like, okay, well, clearly there's either something in there that my body's not reacting well to, or I have something going on that my body is not loving. And then because the tomato is put on top of that, it's like, ooh, the nightshades or, you know, the lycopene or whatever else is in there. And I will say also, like, this process becomes so much harder when you start learning more and more about nutrition, because like the more you know about foods, you're like, oh my God, it's probably this, or it's probably this, or it's probably this in tomatoes, or like, oh my God, I have that, or I have that, or oh my God, I should be doing this diet now, or this, or this. It's just like reintroduction paralysis and like nutritional information overload paralysis too. Oh my God.
Yeah. I will say understanding kind of at least even just generally what's going on in your body really helps. I know like there were times where like, oh, I used to be, you know, I'd feel sick after I ate. And I'm like, you fall into that trap of like, oh, why me? Why is this happening? I don't know what's going on. This is awful. I hate it. And then I, this summer, for the first time in 10 years, had gluten to myself. Like hardcore, got overexcited at the grocery store. Oh, yes. Overexcited at the grocery store. Picked up. I was like, oh, it's the last one of this flavor. Got excited. Didn't realize they made a whole wheat version. Oh, yeah. Came home, still didn't realize it, ate one, a few hours later, horribly sick. And I've never, like, I've never known that I had gluten before, so I don't know what my reaction to it is for sure.
Now
I was
you
really
know.
Sick. Oh, I know now. But I was, like, really sick a few hours later, and I'm like, I honestly don't know what I could have eaten that was this. And I figured it out a few days later when I went to eat it again, and I saw it contains wheat, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Which actually worked out fine. I, like, rinsed out my mouth. I ate a bunch of like gluten enzymes because I was at work. I went and bought a bottle and ate like half of it. It's a very expensive day at work. But yeah, no, I was over here. I was like in the bathroom, just having a horrible night and was looking at it from a completely different lens. I was like, yes, it still sucks. Like, I don't want to be doing this right now. But I'm like, well, what happened? Like, what is my body reacting to? Like, what caused it? Because it, like, it wants to be well. It wants to take care of me. So, like, something happened, and this is just, it's doing the best that it can. And so I was looking at it through the lens of trying to understand what had happened based on, like, how I know my body works. It's completely different from just sitting on there and, like, taking pity for myself, you know?
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, and so before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about like the middle ground, which we've been talking about more and more in the podcast. So if listeners, if you haven't heard me talk about this yet, I don't know where you've been for the last couple of months, but this is something that I'm starting to dive into more. And so it's like, how do you find the middle ground here? Because on the one hand, we have people, our former selves included, right? And now our clients that people are dealing with a lot of digestive issues, which then may necessitate some food restrictions for healing so that people can feel better. And you have the, like, seriously, like, do not pass go and collect $200 food restriction of celiac disease, right? But then there's also another choice of a food restriction of either vegetarianism or veganism. But on the other hand, we're also trying to help people learn how to not be so restrictive with their relationship with food and help them heal their relationship with their bodies. So how do you navigate that with your clients?
I will say that as far as the like additional restrictions, because yes, like if you have celiac disease, like gluten's off the table, that just is what it is. It
doesn't even feel like a restriction anymore. It's like, I would rather not feel like my life. I'm going to die inside.
Right. It's so not worth it.
Yeah.
No, everybody is, you say that you have that and they feel so bad that you can't have bread. And you're like, when bread makes you feel like that, you don't want bread.
You don't feel bad that you can't
eat
bread.
That bread at least. Like I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this being my new normal. But I'd almost say to stop and look at what it is, like why you've made that choice. And because some people will choose like a vegan or plant-based diet because like, oh, it's quote unquote healthy. Or, you know, if you're looking at it from a perspective of like potential like eating disorders and stuff like that, like if you are like, oh, because you're thin, oh, you know, whatever, like that's the goal behind it, then maybe it's time to shift. Or if it's like, well, you know, if you heard it was healthy, it's like, all right, well, you know, it might be healthy to include other foods in your diet. If it is for like religious or moral reasons, then like by all means, I think it's worthwhile like figuring it out with that restriction still there. Which for the case, for me, it was a moral decision that I came to. And you definitely do have to, I think, even, it's totally a side note, but coming from an office where I've seen doctors and nutritionists come in and they'll bitch. And I'm like, that's their decision. It's your job as a professional to take your knowledge and help them given the restrictions that they've put in place, depending on, you know, if it's a good reason or not. And who are you to say that's not a good reason? So that's a little side rant. But that it's worth it. So just because you go to one doctor and they're like, nope, you have to eat fish, you don't have to go home. I've talked to so many people who, that's always the first thing, because that's like the midway, you know, between like meat and no meat is fish. Who go to the doctor and the doctor tells them they have to eat fish. They go home and they're just like, but I just can't do it. And I'm like, then don't. Like, you don't have to. But yeah, I feel like it was maybe an episode on yours where you're talking about like the least amount of restriction that gives you like the benefit that you're looking for. And I think that's definitely a big thing to aim for. And you just have to look at it through a completely different lens. Like there's so many foods that I eat now that like I never ate back when I could eat literally anything and everything. You know, like I'm a much more ambitious, adventurous eater now that I'm like super restricted, quote unquote, than I ever used to be. And it did take time. Like I definitely didn't jump right in, or I'm sure I wouldn't have felt well at all. But like slowly doing that, and then you do have to stop and look at like, have I developed an unhealthy relationship with food? And it's not, you know, an eating disorder, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't qualify as disordered eating. And is that something that you need to work on at the same time? And there's a lot of, I think, ways to help with that too. But when you're at a point when you feel like everything makes you sick, it's really hard to want to make the decision to eat more things. Like, I totally get that. And I know that for some autoimmune diseases, I had a friend who was on like super strict diet, supplement protocol, was feeling really well. So she kind of got a little lax and like sent herself, you know, off a little cliff and felt awful again and set herself back months. And that's exactly what you don't want. And I know that's what's like in the back of your mind playing. And granted with celiac disease, it might not be like months, because in her case it was lupus, it was like, you know, everything. But it's easy to let that fear definitely control you, but it's like, well, what would you be without that thought? That was one of the interesting things that I had taken away. So this therapist, it was a group embodiment program. And it was like, all right, so the thought, you know, that you can't trust food or that your body can't handle food or something, like, who are you without that thought? So it's not saying that it's bad or that it's wrong or that you shouldn't have it or anything. Just like, let's just play a game here. Like, how would you feel without it? Like, and it was like, all right, so let's picture being in a grocery store. And like before, it's like, all right, I have like my list. These are exactly the foods that like I can and will eat. And that's just what it is. It's like, all right, well, what would you, in that context, if we just remove that thought, it's like, I'd be a lot more creative. it's a lot more fun to go there, be like, oh, look at all these cool things that I could try eating, you know, and it takes time, but I also think there is the opportunity to find the right thing where that flip does switch. And it's fine to like go as slow as you need to, as long as you're decided that you want to make progress and that you're working on going in that direction. Definitely a like, you know, baby steps and giant leaps, like whatever you need to do is fine. You don't want to take on more than you can handle and so much that it overwhelms you that you don't even start in the first place. That doesn't help anybody.
That perfectionist mindset.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And, I mean, you're looking at like so many new foods, like, yeah, no, I'm not saying go out to the nearest restaurant that you can find and try something brand new that you've never eaten, that type of food, and it's spicy and it's this and it's that. Like, just like go to the store and like pick one new thing, you know, just make sense. Just start even the things you already do in a new way, just something so that you start feeling like you're getting movement, that you're getting progress, where you still feel somewhat safe, but you're maybe starting to slowly stretch your limit of your comfort zone and move it forward. And I think that's fine because it takes time. It takes time for your, to, you know, fix old beliefs, you know, fix quote unquote. It takes time for your body to heal. It takes time to get used to a new way of doing literally anything. That's just how human beings are. And you don't have to rush it. You have like your whole life, but it also is like, you don't want to live your whole life the way you've been living it thus far. And that's why you've made the choice that it's worthwhile to do this. So you just kind of have to start, add something new, try something a little bit different, figure out how to make it actually fun. I definitely would focus on like in your own kitchen where you can control everything. So you don't have to worry about like, what are they adding to my food back there? Is there going to be gluten in it? Like, it's way easier when you know that like you can't get sick from that, at least in the case of celiac disease or food allergy. So, you know, you have the control and you know that like, if you're like, you know what, I think that I actually really am not good with this one type of food, then definitely don't start there. You know, then you don't have to use that one. Try something new. Try something that's similar to what you already have, but it's different. Just progress. Just yeah. Daily progress.
Yeah, it's kind of like starting with a beginner's mind. And I think a big part of this, or like what comes into this, is trust. And a really big reason why a lot of us struggle with our relationship with food and our bodies is because we've learned not to trust them over the years. So what do you think are some of the biggest reasons that you see in your clients or that you had seen in yourself or just like, you know, the world in general of like why we don't trust ourselves with these things?
Yeah, no, trust is huge. I think when I got to that point in my own journey, I'm like, I don't trust food and I don't trust like my own body either. And I think when it comes to like our own body, there's definitely an element of like, well, we don't know what's going on. Most people don't take the time to like educate themselves at all. And it doesn't mean that you have to. I'm just saying that that can be really helpful to kind of know what's going on. And so it feels less victimizing almost when something does happen. And I think it's natural. It's natural to, you know, if something has been hurting you, to feel like you can't trust it. And in the case of autoimmune disease, yes, that's your body. In the case of celiac disease, food sensitivity, food allergy, anything like that, then it's also food. And so it's hard because it is something that like we need. It's not like, oh, well, it's just alcohol, I can cut it out or something. It's like literally all food. I kind of need that. I for a long time identified with like the eat to live, not live to eat. I'm like, I do, like I eat to live. And like, that's it. Like, that's my relationship with food. I don't do it because I enjoy it. I do it because like, it's absolutely necessary. And I do the bare minimum and I call it a day. And like, that was no fun, but that's what I did because that's what I trusted. I had my few like safe foods and like, that's what my life was. And so it's perfectly normal. So that's where I think it comes into play. You have to like recognize that that's there and want to change it and then start making steps to do it. Because when something seems to have done you wrong in some way, so even like your immune system, your body for betraying you, for, you know, taking out its problems on you, for food, for making you sick, for all these things. Like, that's just a normal human response, is to be fearful, is to not trust. And it doesn't serve us. Maybe it did back at some point in time. Maybe that kept us safe. Maybe that was, there were foods that we actually should have been, that we, you know, weren't safe with, and our bodies knew better than we did. But once it reaches that point, or you know what's going on, you've identified maybe, you know, celiac disease or allergies or whatever, it's not serving you anymore. It's just holding you back now. And so that's the point when you have to go back and be like, all right, well, is this still true? Is this still like in my best interest? If it's not, then like it takes work, but you definitely can get past that.
Yeah. So given that, whether it's an autoimmune disease, it's digestive issues, it's all of these things, right? I mean, not even taking into consideration like diet culture and all of these things of why we learned why not to trust our bodies, right? Like, we can talk about that for hours.
Yeah.
But coming from like the physical, like autoimmune disease and the digestive standpoint, like specifically how your body reacts to certain foods and how you've seen that over the years, how can we start to regain trust, respect, and love for our bodies when we feel like they've been betraying us for so long with these digestive issues and autoimmune disease stuff?
I think part of it's going to come down to like accepting responsibility, like a little bit. Because, you know, like, oh, like, your body's supposed to take care of you. It's not doing a very good job of that when you feel like shit all the time, when like you have an autoimmune disease, when everything's inflamed, whatever. But you're also supposed to take care of it. Like, it's not a completely one-way, like, street by any means. So choosing to heal, like, eat good foods and, like, try to be more compassionate, I think is a good first step. And then something that I actually found really helpful for looking at, like, if you've identified that belief or a belief in general, and this is, like, great, it works for, like, literally anything in life, I don't know if you're familiar at all with Byron Katie and the work.
A little bit. I've had people recommend it to me, but I haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah. She has a great like free like worksheet on her website and stuff. But that was the other big thing in that workshop I attended that really like helped me turn a corner. And so it's basically you're taking a thought, which I think I probably had done like, I can't trust my body, or my body can't do anything right, or something like that. Because I'm like, you know, I still feel sick when I eat. I still react to food, even though, like, I feel like I shouldn't. I'm doing all these things right, and it's still going wrong. And so you stop, and you look at that thought. You're like, is it true? And, you know, so it's like, well, I can't trust my body. Like, it can't do anything right. Is that true? Well, no. Like, I guess it's really objectively doing almost everything right. Like, no, I can't eat this one protein without, you know, a firestorm, but like, I can see, I can wiggle my toes, I can move, I can do all of these things. And it's going to, what you can and can't do, obviously, is going to depend on everybody, but like, under no circumstances is it doing everything wrong. Like, unless you're like already in the ground, like, it's doing something right. And, and so you're looking at that and you're like, all right. And so you keep going. There's a few questions, but stopping and looking and be like, you know what? Like, it actually is doing a lot of things right. And I'm focusing on that one thing that it's doing wrong, you know, in my mind. And you're turning around and you're like, well, you know, how can you trust your body? And they're like, you know what? Like it is, it does so many things right, you know? And like, there's more to the process than that. And like I said, like, it's, I can even give you that link if you want, but it's a great free resource. And you can find like practitioners who have been trained specifically in that. But even just like to poke around with yourself and, you can use it for this kind of stuff. You can use it for anything in life, which I think we all could use. And all of our problems are thoughts. Almost all of our problems are thoughts, at least, you know, it's what we think about the problem that's the problem.
Yeah.
And so that, and see, this is what happens. I start talking, then I get distracted by my own brain. It's like, I had a thought and I'm going to come back to it. And when I came back to it, it was not there anymore.
That was me all the time. This is, I think, why my podcasts will go in so many different directions. I like to let people talk for a long time. And I'm like coming up with all these questions in my head. I'm like, oh my God, I want to ask about that. Or like, I want to ask about that person's story. But then by the time they finish, I'm like, oh God, what was I going to ask them? That was that really great point about that. And now it's gone.
It's just like every time you walk into a room and you can't remember what you went there for, and you're like, oh my God, if this is happening to me in my 20s,
yep.
Like I'm screwed in 50 years.
That's happened to me since I was like 15, so. Oh man. Well, okay. So speaking of resources, we've talked about Byron Katie, which I will definitely include in the show notes. What is one book that you think everybody should read?
Ooh. I feel like, oh God, what is it? I'm going to see. So Michael Pollan, and because this goes for like all types of eaters. I'm going to be typing here. I feel like it's in Defense of Food? Whichever one, the moral of the story was like, eat real food, like not too much, mostly plants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That I feel like literally every human could benefit from. And it doesn't mean that you have to eat only mostly plants. If you want to eat all plants, by all means, if you want to, you know, but I think that one is great as far as like diet goes. And then I haven't read the regular version, but I'm working my way through You Are a Badass at Making Money. And I know she has like a You Are a Badass and like some other versions, and it's great. And it definitely, you know, you stop and you look at your own BS and that's a great one too.
Yeah, that's actually next on my to-read shelf. Also, I have I've read You Are a Badass twice or three times now, but I've also listened to it on Audible, and she reads it, and she's really, really funny.
Even just reading it, you can get it. Like, it's a fun book to go through.
Yeah, definitely. So tell people where they can find you, if they would like to hang out with you and find out more stuff about like veganism and digestive health and doing that in the context of healing your relationship with food, all of the good things. Plug all your things.
So right now, mostly on Instagram. I'm a horrible millennial. I'm not like a huge social media person. So
I hate social media, if we're being honest.
Like I legit started Instagram like when I started like my business more hardcore. I'm like, how am I in my 20s and I don't know how to use Instagram? But at Sarah_Keel, so Sarah with an H, it's the right way to spell it. If you ask anybody without the H, they're wrong. literally, I don't think I've ever met a Sarah where we didn't be like, how do you spell your name? Like, and if you're both H, you're like, cool, you spell it right. You got it. And if
we can be friends.
Like, and if you are different, you're like, nope, you're wrong. Like, no, you start an argument with a stranger named Sarah. Always. Always. So Sarah with an H underscore K-E-A-L. So Sarah_Keel. So that's Instagram. And then my website is just sarahkeel.com. Obviously spelled the same way. I'll give you the link so that you can sign up for the free guide. So it goes through some of those like big myths and kind of how you can make them work if you are a plant-based eater. Same goes for vegetarian or if you just want to know. And then those are the two main places to find me. You know, anybody's welcome. If you have a question or an email, it's info@sarahkeel.com. It's on my website too. And on Instagram. but yes, I love new friends.
Unless they spell Sarah without an H.
I love when you get mail and they're like trying to get you to buy your thing. And you're like, you didn't even spell my name. Like, that's not my name. Like, I'm not going to give you my money. That's not my name.
Right. They don't spell your name right. Or like,
if you haven't figured it out after a little while, like, come on now.
It's also like in your email signature, it's on all of your branding. And it's just like, I will get emails from companies sometimes and like, I don't want to complain about it, but it's like, oh, we're, you know, X brand that is like, you know, super processed food and like doesn't care about, you know, diet culture or anything, like promoting weight loss. They're like, do you want to work with us? I'm like, did you even what?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
oh, yeah.
PSA out into the world, like, do your research before you reach out to anybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God, in all walks of life. Well, anyways, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed this. I will include all of these things in the show notes so everyone can find you. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.